and this is the Sunday night edition of TS Radio. I have a few announcements I want to make before we bring our guest on this evening. First off, I want to tell everybody I'm beginning my fourth year on Blog Talk Radio. Our anniversary was June 10th. We completed our third year, and this is the beginning of the third year of these shows. And so I'm hoping we can make some progress here. But I just wanted to tell you, I was a little bit proud of that. As many of you know, we've been following the June Nguyen case from California. And we were told, well, I should say Linda Kincaid, who has been pursuing a welfare check with Ms. Nguyen. Linda has found out that the establishment of communication phone calls to the two daughters who have been isolated from their mother isolated from them by the guardian, they supposedly let her have a phone call with these two daughters. It turns out there was only a speaker phone. The mother apparently either was not actually even in the room or was not able to respond to the daughter, so they never actually did get to speak with her. And Linda has, of course, followed this up and requested for the sixth time another welfare check. And she has written a letter to Ms. Jameson, who is the guardian that, of course, has taken control of everything and is orchestrating all of this. And I'm going to read you this letter quickly. It says, Ms. Jameson, this is from Linda Kincaid to Ms. Jameson. I will be in Modesto the end of this week and the beginning of next week. I again, she says, request a visit and welfare check with June Nguyen. This is my sixth request. You continue to deny June Nguyen her right to visitation. Prior to June 26, 2013, you allowed June no contact whatsoever with her daughters Linda Lucido and Cheryl Morris. You denied June any contact with any other family members, friends, or advocates, with the exception of her daughter, Sheila Nguyen. On June 26th, you established a phone call with Linda Lucido and Cheryl Morris in which you purported to have June Nguyen in the room and listening on speakerphone. You refused to place the phone close enough to June that her daughters could actually hear her speak. They did, however, hear giggling in the background. The daughters are not certain that June was actually in the room during that call. On June 26th, I attempted to visit June for a welfare check. Prior to that time, I sent you five requests for a visit with June. I informed you two times that I would be in Modesto on June 26th and wished to visit June. You did not respond, which is pretty much what she does. She just doesn't do anything. When I arrived at June's residence, Sheila Nguyen denied entry on your instructions. Sheila further refused to take any photos of June using my camera, also on your instructions. Since June 26, you have ignored all further requests from Linda Lucido and Cheryl Morris for a phone call with June. They continue to ask for daily phone visits with their mother. If it is not convenient for you to personally facilitate daily phone calls, you could request hospice providers facilitate those calls. Hospice focuses on quality of life and time with family, and hospice staff would certainly facilitate phone contact with family outside the area. At this time, you have done nothing to allay the family's concerns for June's well-being. Arranging for June's daughters to have regular contact with hospice staff would substantially reduce the tension in this situation. It would also fulfill your duty as conservator to keep the family informed of June's condition. And, of course, Linda signed her name. And we haven't heard anything back. Now, in an interest of being fair, because we have covered this, I sent Ms. Jameson this evening before the show an invitation, and it was to appear on our program. And I wrote, Dear Ms. Jameson, I would like to extend an invitation to you to appear as guest on my radio show that airs on Sunday evenings. The show deals only with the issues of guardian abuse facilitated by the courts and the suffering caused to the families as a result. As you know, we have been following the June Nguyen case closely and had received notice that you were finally going to allow the family to communicate with Ms. Nguyen after more than 5 years of no contact. As I understand it, there was one phone call where Ms. Nguyen did not actually get to speak and was supposedly able to listen only by speakerphone. There is no evidence she was actually anywhere near the phone. Also, there has been no communication allowed since that call, and efforts by Linda Kincaid to conduct a welfare check have been denied. I am offering you the opportunity to speak to the situation and possibly clear the air. I will guarantee that there will be no phone calls allowed, and I will not allow anyone to establish a confrontational situation with you. Please let me know when you might be available for the interview. Very sincerely, Marty Oakley. So we'll sit and wait on that and see what happens. But we need to keep an eye on this June Gwynn case, because I'm still, I quite honestly, nobody has actually seen this woman. That's what's bothering me. Nobody has actually seen anybody that could be identified as June Gwynn. And I am even more concerned than I was before that possibly Ms. Gwynn has expired. Nobody handles anything like this. The only time you do something this way is if you've got something to hide. And the only thing the guardian and this daughter, who's supposed to have ownership of her mother, have or could have to hide is whether or not this woman is dead or alive. And that's my opinion on that. Now then, let's move along here. We've got a absolutely wonderful guest this evening. And I say wonderful in the sense of we get some real shakers and doers and people who really try to work through the system to rectify what has been an egregious assault on their family. And tonight's guest is Rosanna Miller from Ohio. So, Rosanna, welcome to the show. Uh-oh. All right. Try that, Rosanna. See if that works.
I said thanks, Marty, for having me.
Oh, you bet. I forgot to unmute you there while I was running my mouth. Rosanna, I think to start off, if you could give everybody a brief background on what's happened, and then let's move through it step by step.
Okay. Now, I've got my earpiece in case I have to pull some papers or something. So
sure.
If it starts sounding funny or I need to take it out, please let me know, okay?
Okay.
Am I all right now?
You're good.
Okay. Well, this started 6.5 years ago. Thanksgiving of 2006, my mother ended up dead. And just to set up this, my parents were married for 58 years, the only people they ever knew. Very frugal, humble people. My dad only ever worked for the railroad. They saved all their lives. I mean, simple, humble. If we had a country that ran like my mother did, we'd be in a good place. But at any rate, as time went on, she became my father's caretaker because my dad has dementia, mentally impaired, and this is the way he was when she died. I want this completely understood, that my father was mentally impaired with dementia and he needed a guardian. My father couldn't use a phone book when my mother was sent to her grave. So, and then, of course, when she died, and I guess we can talk about her death later as we earlier talked, but when she died, her death went into an investigation, a police investigation. I've got a 10-page police report. It was active for 7 months. It was an active status. And it is still to this day, I want this understood, it is an ongoing investigation. I can't get any of the files. I have tried and tried and tried. They will not let me look at them. It's an ongoing investigation. I also know, though, that I'll say this and kind of get off of that, which is really it's important, but there were just my mother's investigation was, and I use the term slaughtered. I hate to say that, but it's true. None of the forensic testing was done for her that should have been. What was ordered wasn't done. So you gather all the evidence and you analyze it later. That's the standard. You gather and then you analyze. Well, you can't analyze if you don't have it all. So it benefited the suspect. And as much as I hate to say this, the suspect is my brother, and it is and it always will be. And 40-year-old, and I didn't realize that, you know, he was in such trouble when she died until I started researching all that. And anyway, so he's in the house with my father, who has dementia, mentally impaired, and he's been there for a while. And anybody who knows anything about mental impairment knows that these people, no matter how bad it is for them, if it's a norm for them, you've got to keep that around or they feel lost. Yeah, you've got to make the clocks bigger. You've got to do things to make them feel comfortable in their home, that they feel secure. And even though there's something wrong, if it's been there for a long time, you can't just move that out. They'll go into panic state. So my brother being there and already living there, was a hard thing to get out. Switching over into the abuse of my father, my mother's death is still going on. It's still an open case today, and we've got serious problems with that situation, very serious. But I filed for guardianship right away of my father because I am the successor for the trust, the power of attorney. My mother and dad had every legal document in place, every legal document, I's dotted, T's crossed. It didn't miss a beat. And so I stepped up to the plate. My name's in there. I stepped up to the plate, filed for guardianship of my father in probate. Well, there is where another nightmare started. And this first judge we had for 3 years, Michael L. Brady, he drug this thing out for 3 years, which left my brother in the house with my father manipulating his mind. Undue influence. We all know how this works. Our laws in Ohio, you have to be of sound mind or memory or free from undue influence and restraint. My father wasn't any one of those four things. So at any rate, we played around in probate for the longest time. I had to file, and I just posted them too on your blog there, from the Ohio Supreme Court. I've had six cases go up before the Ohio Supreme Court. Now that should all tell us something. The first one was a public records writ I had to file because the judge was holding public records on us. The second, psyche valve, is what he was holding. And I had to file a writ of mandamus against him because he refused to give it to us. And it's public records in probate. And, of course, that all started everything. These people take an issue when you have to fight them for things, and they're supposed to be our servants. These people are supposed to be serving us. And they act like we're supposed to be serving them. At any rate, you can see the cases up there. The first one was a public record. The second one was a precedendo that I filed because it was been 2.5 years. The judge wasn't making a decision. My brother's still in the house manipulating my father. And then, of course, a decision did come down because I filed that. But he found my father competent against two psychological evaluations.
The judge found your father competent. Did he ever speak to him, Roseanne?
Yep.
And he found him competent.
Yep. Even though two psychological doctors did full psychological evaluations on him and filled out the expert statement evaluation, we all know what those are, and it says he has dementia, he's mentally impaired, the boxes were checked, he needs a guardian, can't handle his finances. My father can't answer anything. I mean, I have printouts of all his tests. He can't answer. You know, the first doctor in March of 2007 asked him, who's your brothers and sisters? Who does he, my dad answers us, his kids. Asked him, who's your, and he's naming off us. And so the Dr. Tilly repeats that. So it's, you know, blah, 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 blah. And dad goes, yes. And he goes, so where do you fall on that line? He goes, what do you mean? He goes, well, where do you fall in, you know, what order? And dad goes, well, I'm older than Jim. Yeah, I'm older than Jim. That's my brother's name. And, I mean, he doesn't register. This doctor is asking about his siblings, not his children.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's the start in March of 2007. And the whole thing, my dad can't answer anything. He can't remember when mom died. I mean, it's sad to read this. But this judge played around with this. And here's what I've got to tell everybody. You know, as easily as the courts can call a competent person incompetent to keep them in the courts, to have them hire lawyers, to keep this money flowing through the court system, they can turn around and call an incompetent person competent. Because they know that for whatever reason, it's going to fill their pockets. It's going to make them money.
Yeah. Yep.
If the judge had, well, I really can't call him a judge, but Michael L. Brady, if he had honored my mom and dad's legal documents, every one of them in place, if he had honored the professional credentials, PhD and a PSYD, these are psychologists that did full psyche valves on my dad, and if he had honored the statutes and the constitution of our state, the laws were all in place to stop this, and he ignored all three elements.
Well, this is one of the things in talking to Wayne Barbuto the other night. This is one of the things that I've always tried to differentiate these people that are heading up these administrative courts. They call them a judge, but they are not. They're an administrative clerk. And the other thing is, the minute you engage them, the minute you step into that courtroom and acknowledge them, you have forfeited your constitutional rights and protections and submitted yourself to statute and code, which has nothing to do with the Constitution. But it's a trick they play constantly, telling you, you have to appear there. We'll get into this in another series of broadcasts we're going to do, but this is one of the things I've found out, is never to engage in that court, because it isn't a real court. Yeah, go ahead.
And this is years ago. We all learn a lot as we go through the process. You know where I'm coming from here. And you and I have talked about this. And, in fact, I just put on your in the chat area a couple links to that the group out in New York that's really trying to get these common law juries up and running, and we need them. Anyway, I put those on your site. I already sent you some links, too, concerning this. But this is something we all need to talk about. We need to say, what can we do? I'm tired of talking. Too many of us talk about our problems, but we need to start really focusing on what is it we could do to help the government understand they're supposed to serve us. They're supposed to be serving us, not using us, not taking from us, not trespassing on our rights.
Right.
And that's what they're doing, because it's funny, because for the same reason my mother ended up in her grave, and we can get to another show on that later and what happened, and it was for somebody's benefit. Somebody wanted a free ride, and, they wanted him out of the house, and that somebody had to go, and it wasn't going to be her, you know what I'm saying? Oh, it wasn't going to be him, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And so it's funny, though, because when you stop and think about it, the same reason that caused her death is the same thing these agents, I call them, in the corporation, are doing to us. They're taking from us what doesn't belong to them, but they think they're entitled to it.
Right.
It's exactly the same thing. They're on just different sides of that line.
Right.
You know, one's got the legalized.
We've said many times on this show, Roseanne, if you or I did the very things that these attorneys and guardians and judges were doing, we'd be in prison for grand larceny.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
Yet they're not.
And I guess what I want to share with everybody is, through my experience of this, it's just become so... this great revelation that these people are all working together. They all know what's going on in the other departments. They all know where they're coming from, what they're doing. When we had the very first hearing in May of 2007, I'm looking at the transcript right now, and, Michael L. Brady's sitting on the bench, and, he keeps talking about everybody's going to have to account for every cent of Claire's money. It's the court's job to gather up all the monies and see what we have going on. My job is to acquire all the information for your father as to his monies. I'm reading all these now. and he talks about Dr. Stoltz giving a physical on my father over and over, because he's already got a psychological evaluation from Dr. Tilley. But he keeps talking about it's the court's job to make sure every penny of your father's money is accounted for, whether he did that on his own or with somebody else's assistance. I take that job unbelievably seriously. That is how I have conducted myself on this bench. And your father's best interest and his safety, security for the rest of his days, to be financially sound and secure as we can make him and physically safe. I look at all this crap in this hearing transcript, and I'm thinking, Ben, how the you know what did they lose $250,000 out of my parents' estate? And not only that, but how did my father end up living like a pig, as you will see in those photos on your link? On my, you know, on the story,
mm-hmm.
You can open up the habeas and you can open up the affidavit and you can see the little pictures I put last September my brother was arrested and I got in there to take the pictures. This is what my father was living in. Cat shit. He went to the hospital with cat shit on his feet, in his hair. The house was totally destroyed. I mean,
I wish I could
pass to you the smell. My gosh. Smell was just horrendous. And how can this judge in this hearing transcript that I just read you on May 1st, 2007, how could they have done this to my father by refusing me the guardianship that I needed to have over my father to protect him from all this? So I hope the people open up those habeas corpus and the affidavit and look at those photos, because I've got them in there as evidence. And
And the judge, Roseanne, the judge saw these pictures, correct?
Oh, yeah, it was all in the newspaper. Well, the pictures of the house was in the newspaper. My brother's arrest was in the newspaper. Oh, yes, I've had them out online. Oh, yes, they made comment about it. And she keeps posting those photos out there. You're daggone right, I'm dead. I'm going to keep on posting them, too. People need to know what the court, this is the court's fault.
Yes. Well, I think what it demonstrates, Roseanne, is this is kind of like the epitome of the interest is not in that elderly person protecting them or providing them care or anything else. This is simply about grand theft. This is simply about how are we going to access the funds, and whatever happens to that individual, too bad. You cannot have this level of abuse occurring across the country in every state, city, and town and tell me that anybody is concerned. That should be concerned, these judges, the APS agents, the social workers, the attorneys, the predatory guardians. None of these people give a flying flip.
No.
And they will lie, cheat, and steal. Go ahead.
You're right. They will. It's like they have no blood that flows through their veins. Like, there's just no.
Yes.
It's just it's business as usual. That's what I call it.
Yes. Yep.
And
one of the things we talked about, Roseanne, too, was the fact, and we've talked about this on other broadcasts, this is RICO. This is one of the most clear-cut cases of collusion and a pattern of activity that breaks the law, that violates rights, that is theft. It's all for profit. This is one of the most clear-cut cases of RICO. And we cannot get the Department of Justice. We can't get our attorney generals in our states. We can't get anybody to do a damn thing about it.
Well, here's something I might, now that you're talking about sharing our problems. I have been recently at Jim Jordan's, he's the federal House of Representatives for Ohio, of this area, by the way, of Logan County. And also at Ron Young, who's really on the northeast part of Ohio. He is our Ohio representative, and I've been at their doors recently because I saw Jim Jordan pretty much lay into Director of FBI Mueller because he didn't have any answers on the IRS scandal. I mean, you know, and our representatives are supposed to represent us, and they need to be held. Why aren't you asking these questions? Why is not the DOJ and FBI that I can prove that these people knew this inventory was wrong? That now I can prove, since my brother's arrest, they've had my father on psychotropic drugs for 6 years almost. This whole time, when they said he was okay, why is somebody on psychotropic drugs? And I have the documents to prove this.
Roseanne, the thing is, none of those drugs were approved. In fact, they're prohibited for use on the elderly, particularly the elderly with dementia or Alzheimer's or any signs of it. Those aren't approved. Why are they putting these elderly people, this is chemical restraint, Uh-huh. But why are you doing this to these people? I don't understand. It has to be, again, a profit motive. They're getting a deal from the pharmaceutical companies. The FDA has turned a blind eye to this. This has been reported to them time after time after time that these off-label drugs are being administered not only to children too young to tangle with them, but with the elderly who are already vulnerable, and they're not supposed to. And the FDA's response is, yeah, and what? And it's just, you know, you report to these agencies. You try to jump the hoops, and I think that's where we're messing up, Rosanna. We're trying to do things the way they tell us have to be done, and they are telling us that they have to be done in a certain way, knowing full well it will never work. So we've got to come away from this. As long as we play the game by their rules, which are imaginary and fictional for the most part,
they are.
We're never going to make any progress. We can't keep doing the same thing over, you know, like they say, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing twice the same way and expecting a different result. So we've got to look at some other options here, other ways to go and address this, because we're never going to get any satisfaction from even our state Supreme Courts or our representatives or our senators or any of these people who should be acting in our defense.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Go ahead.
Well, I hope that people pick up this tonight's show and send the link to all the reps throughout the country. I mean, this is what we need. If we're going to get any help from them, they need to be flooded with this. If they're flooded,
yes,
they're going to want us to go away, and they're going to fix it a lot faster. And they can make an emergency call to have the DOJ and FBI look at this. Our states aren't going to do anything about it. I mean, gosh, I have, like I said, 6 cases before the highest Supreme Court, and they're just putting their blinders on. You know, we don't care about the elders. We don't care about the exploitation of the estates, because they refuse to take it as a substantial constitutional question or great general public concern. They refuse. So what does that tell us?
Yeah.
What does that tell us? So getting redress, remedy, or relief there is not an option. And the people are going to have to start taking their own states back and making their own reps or their own government, the 3 branches, responsible within their own states. I want the states to stay sovereign. I want them to be independent of the federal. But, by gosh, we do pay money to the FBI and the DOJ. And if our own court systems are corrupt and have conspiracy and collusion going in it with all these thugs working around in it, then we need somebody to look at this. I posted not so long ago some information I found. The probate throughout the country is a $1 trillion business. It's the biggest business in this country. You understand, all of our monies are going to the judicial branch, yet our representatives give all these bailouts to businesses, private, executive branch. They're even funding the judicial branch to study us because we're patriotic, common people. You know, we're some kind of terrorist or something going to the country.
Yeah.
And I mean, in reality, our government is becoming our domestic enemies.
I agree. I agree with you totally on that. The thing, people we need to fear are sitting out there in the district of criminals. I mean, that's just all there is to it. One of the things I saw recently, and I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. It was quoted, but in reference to Social Security and Medicare, that 70% of any remaining real wealth in this country is now 70% is held by people age 60 and older. But the downside of that is, in people 60 and older, now almost 78% of them have no wealth at all. So what does that tell you about the actual wealth of the nation as a whole when the oldest of us is holding any real wealth worth 70% of the nation's total wealth, and yet out of that same group, 68% of those people have no wealth at all. So what they're telling us is that there's this very small group of people, population-wise, who are holding an extraordinary amount of wealth, assets of all kinds. And what is happening is this concerted effort across the country is to extract as much of that wealth as possible for a select few people, these predators that call themselves guardians, these law firms, these judges, whoever else is involved, APS, hospice scares me to death these days. That's like the Grim Reaper showing up at your door.
Right.
And, yeah, well, they are, because their mandate now under Obamacare is no longer to give you aid and comfort in what might be your last days, but to encourage you to hasten the end of life, to forego any medications or treatments so that you bow out gracefully and you don't cost us any money. And so, but all of these people are making money off of this. And I also saw this guardianship thing referred to, just what you're saying, the fastest growing cottage industry in the country.
Right.
And the most lucrative. Well, where in the world is all that lucrativeness coming from? It's coming from the people that they're stealing from.
Mm-hmm.
And now, they're holding this up like it's some wonderful thing.
Yeah, and when I speak with my reps, and because I'm you know, putting it to them this way, you're funding all billions of dollars for bailouts, which is not constitutional, by the way. I want you to know that is not constitutional. And you're funding, because I pulled up all the bailouts, you're funding all billions of dollars of bailouts to different people, companies, and whatever throughout the time. Then you're funding the judicial branch to study us. And then, and you're doing all these things that either aren't constitutional or sliding the money, and now on top of it, you're telling us you can't get involved, representative, because your separate branches of the government, this is a $1 trillion business that you're taking away from the people. That is their first primary job, is commerce, economy. If you take away from the people their monies, then you're using their tax dollars to fund bailouts and to the judicial branch. You're raping us dry.
Yeah, I'm sorry there. Yes, I agree with you, and that's exactly what they're trying to do, Rosanna, is take that. Well, I found out, we've talked many times about that virulent predator operating down there in Sarasota, Florida. And at last count, she had somewhere around $50 million of other people's money. And a little checking around, come to find out, most of that, hers and many others, is offshored in tax-free accounts. It's also hidden from the purview of, like, the IRS or anything else. And have you noticed, Roseanne, that when you call the IRS on these people, the IRS doesn't respond? They're not interested?
Yeah, and you know, I have some forms to fill out about that, and I'm going to do that too, but I'm telling you what, I am over my head in motions and briefs and subpoenas. They deny me everything. I mean, they just have restraining orders to remove the lawyer for the theft of this estate, subpoenas. They deny me everything, and the lawyer gets everything. Now, how is that equal? How is that due process? How is that fair and impartial in the court system? And that's what my affidavit of disqualification brings up. So if the people on this show read that, open up that link, they'll read that in that affidavit. They'll see it. So you're right. We've got to do something here to get these courts to work, serve us the way this was intended.
Well, I think the key there, Rosanna, is this. Is sidestepping these kangaroo courts, because it's smoke and mirrors, it's tricks, it's deception. You can't win. When you've got a so-called judge sitting on the bench who is not constrained by the Constitution but is operating by code and statute, which he can ignore at his will and create whole new ones that nobody ever heard of before, we have sent, Rosanna, I have sent to state attorney generals, to the DOJ, that whole mess out there, I have sent documents showing the violation of constitutional rights, the right to due process, you know, all of it. I have shown them where the judge willfully not only violated constitutional rights, but also mocked the victim and the family. And basically said from the bench he didn't care about that. He didn't have to. The law is what he says it is. Uh-huh. Well, uh-huh. that's a tyrant. That's a tyrant. And that's not a judge. That's somebody who's been given carte blanche to do whatever they damn well please, and nobody, and these phony judicial oversight boards. The Bar Association, I still say it, I'll say it 1,000 times, that's a closed union shop. It needs to be busted up. It needs to be separated from our lawyers and attorneys. They can't license anyone. They are not able to license. So why anyone who goes through law school must then go to the local bar association and take some test that they have, and then they give them approval to go purchase their license from the state? We don't need the bar association.
Uh-huh,
we don't need it. And all it does is rule and run our courts, and you see what a mess that is.
It's funny that you bring that up, because I'm looking right here. Something came across me earlier today. You know, we need to get in and start studying the Constitution. You need to get in. There are classes all over the place. IOTC is great. You need to get in some, like, 6 weeks, whatever, 12-week course, and study the Constitution, because everything is in the Constitution. I'm looking here at Article 1, Section 9. It says at the end, "No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state." So they can't be doing all that, and that's consent of Congress. Those words, I thought, without the consent of Congress. Well, then Congress can pull them off. They can get them out. They can do what they want to do right there. It says so.
If you read the construction of the District of Columbia, the 10 square miles, where they replaced the organic constitution in 1871 with the corporate America, USA Corp, and all of that crap, and everything that's done in the District of Criminals applies only to the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, where the ATF and IRS are headquartered, insular territories and possessions. And if you read the Trading with the Enemies Act, Roosevelt said it was the first declaration of war against the American people by the central government. Because we are, if you read the Constitution of the United States, we are foreign to the federal government. They are foreign to us. And they treat us as foreign governments, as foreign nations. One of the things I found out in this last week was that, like, if your state, this is another one of those tricks in court, they'll ask you, are you a citizen of the state of, like in my case, Minnesota? If I answered yes, I just submitted to federal jurisdiction. It isn't the state of Minnesota. It's Minnesota State, and it is different. And I also found out, and I believe Marcia Southwick, that had been on here, was one of the people that talked about this, that when you abbreviate, use the two-letter abbreviation and the zip code, you are saying that you reside in a federal jurisdiction. But if you spell out the name of your state, omit the zip code, they'll still mail your letter. It won't cost you as much, and you're saying, I am a resident of this state. And so, you know, those are things we have to learn and we have to understand, and how all of this is going to work out, how we're going to figure all of this out and put it all together, I'm not sure of yet. But it can be done. And Roseanne, with the work you've done, Linda Kincaid, Elaine at NASCA, all of those people, we're going to get this figured out. We're going to get this figured out. But like I say, I think our biggest problem is how to get away from these phony courts and keep our business out of those courts. We should not have to submit after death or before death anything to a probate court, which becomes active only upon presentation of a death certificate. So how does a live person get in there? They took a petition, declared them civilly dead and a ward of the state, and they become a unit, a commodity, something to be traded, bought, and sold. And that's exactly how they treat them. And it is a de facto death certificate when you become a ward of the state. Mm-hmm. So where we go from there, we've got to put all this together, and it's something we all need to work on. Now, Roseanne, you talked about the condition of your father. Where is your father now?
Well, when my brother was finally arrested last September, they took him to the nursing home. Of course, they're saying that he went on his own. And took him to the nursing home, and since then, and you'll see this in my habeas corpus and in my affidavit of disqualification. You'll see all the police reports and everything in there. It's really an eye-opener to open that up and see it. But he tried to kill himself in December, dragging a chair into his room. They had to call the EMSs, the police, and everything. Then they shipped him off in December down to Dayton and had him down there for 2.5 weeks, loading him up on drugs. Subduing him so that he's quiet. he goes along with anything they want to do, you know. So he's been on drugs now, and he's not doing well. They've got him loaded up on more. I just got a report here now. I don't know how she got this, but so I'm looking at it now from the hospital in January. Listen to this. Two psych doctors have said he was mentally impaired with dementia and, you know, Alzheimer's, that thing. That's what my dad has. My dad's 83 years old. So at any rate, 84 now. But anyway, they have him down now listed as bipolar for the first time in his life. A man who's been in the hospital so many times because he's got medical heart problems for decades. I mean, in a hospital, around nurses, around doctors, how did they not diagnose bipolar before now? So what they've done here, Marty, they put him on Depakote.
I'm sorry, Roseanne, to laugh, but this bipolar has become the end-all, be-all. I don't care. You could take your dog into one of these courts, and if there was money attached to it, they'd swear your dog was bipolar and start medicating them and make a ward out of him.
Well,
go ahead.
That's okay. I appreciate that. The thing of it is, when my brother was arrested, his trial was the end of March, and I actually heard this internal medicine doctor physician who helped the judge out, by the way, through my guardianship case, and battled against the psych doctors, was saying under oath on the stand that my father was okay. He gave him a little stupid MMSE and said that my dad was okay, but I've since learned that he was moving around the scores, okay? I won't go into any more detail than that. Anyway, and so he was on the stand in my brother's trial in March, and that's when it opened up that he's had dad on Zoloft, Buspar, and I knew he'd been on Depakote. Depakote, you know, was sued last year by the DOJ. Did you know that?
Uh-huh.
Abbott was sued big time, big settlement, huge settlement, because they were mislabeling Depakote for Alzheimer's and dementia when it's for bipolar, seizures, and migraines. Now, I'm in healthcare, so I'm licensed to pass meds, so we have to watch for side effects, and we have to know what these meds are for giving them to their clients. So anyway, they were sued because they were mislabeling it. Now, they've had my father on Depakote for, I don't know, better than a year, year and a half, whatever, when he was supposed to be okay. And now I'm looking at this new, this year's hospital report, and he's now listed down as bipolar for the first time in his life because they've got to make his condition match the medicine. Think about it. They were sued for dementia and Alzheimer's, so they're going to make his condition match the medicine.
God. And when you read the circulars on these medications, Tammy Hooks pointed that out when she was on talking about her son, Jimmy Suskey, that here they prescribe these medications, and you go through and you read what they call side effects. And I maintain that what they list as side effects is actually the intent of the drug. The side effect would be if it actually did any good. That would be a side effect. But when you read that it can cause brain bleeds, heart attacks, strokes, vomiting, dizziness, paralysis, you know, muscle spasms, tardive dyskinesia, temporary blindness. I mean, the list is in some cases 2 and 3 pages long. You can't tell me that you know that these so-called side effects could and most likely will occur and not tell me that was exactly your intent. Like, say, the adverse side effect would be if the medication actually did any good. And you'd think, well, geez, that was a great side effect from all this stuff that made me crazy and sick. Now, as far as bipolar, that is the newest, or, well, I should say the most long-term use. Everybody's bipolar, according to probate court, if they've got a big estate. They're all bipolar, everybody. you know, the judge is, the attorneys are, everybody is. Everybody's bipolar. And these drugs, I know one of the great thorns in my side is the ubiquitous Dr. Phil, who spews more crap in one show than I can produce in a year. But when he talks about, well, you know, your child, you know, what's wrong with them? It's not that they have a behavior problem. They have a biochemical deficiency. He's blowing smoke. They have no way to know that. That's an assumption for which there is no evidence whatsoever. Now, we do know with dementia and Alzheimer's that there is a structural change in the brain that is identifiable and can tell them that, yes, this person has dementia. And yes, this person is suffering from the onset of Alzheimer's, because we see these changes in the brain. You can see it on a CAT scan.
And, great to see this.
Yes, but the thing is, you see, they don't do that because that would preclude them from prescribing these medications. Excuse me, my house alarm just went off there. It would preclude them from prescribing these medications, and they don't do the tests that would show that the elder person is suffering from any form of Alzheimer's, you know, early stage, late stage. They don't do any tests that would show that that person has got any structural change in their brain that would indicate that, yes, they have dementia or Alzheimer's. They don't do this for a reason, because if they do the tests and they get those results and they prescribe the psychotropic drugs, that is considered attempted murder.
Well, so let me tell you now that you're on this subject, you can do the scans. You can look at this up on the internet. It's very out there. But it shows the neurons that are firing and the plaques that are there that are blocking things. It's color-coded. It's really awesome to see a normal brain versus one that's got dementia, Alzheimer's. And they can do that. And back in 07, I got to tell you this because this will help you all understand this. Back in, I filed for guardianship a month after Mom's death, January the 4th of 2007. We had our first hearing May the 1st of 2007, which is what I was reading from that transcript, and the judge was supposed to secure the money. And anyway, he asked Dr. Stoltzfus, that's the physician that had my father at the time, and by the way, he was only my dad's physician, maybe close to a year, just under a year, only had my father. Now, my dad's got major medical. He's blind, almost blind. He's got a lot of medical problems and has had. And Dr. Fulmer was his longtime doctor for decades. But Dr. Stoltzfus had just taken over Dr. Fulmer's practice. So less than a year's time is when he knew my dad. How much history do you have with someone when you've only known him less than a year? All you've got is paper there in front of you. And so Dr. Stoltzfus, and Dr. Stoltzfus, now Dr. Tilly, the PSYD, had already done a full psychological evaluation on my father, found him with dementia, mental impaired, needing a guardian, can't handle his finances or his person, blah, blah, blah. So on May the 1st, Michael Brady ordered Dr. Stoltzfus to do a medical physical. Now get this, Marty. A medical physical on my father. He wanted to see what was wrong with him medically, okay? 15 days later, Dr. Stoltzfus produces to the court a one-page, no statement of expert evaluation came with it, just a personal typed-out page. He's calling it a mental competency evaluation. He never gave the court a medical physical showing all Dad's conditions, his medicines he was on medically. He never gave the judge anything like that. He just gave him this one-page mental, trying to downplay the professional clinical psychologist who does full psychological evaluation. And that's what gave him. Yeah, and Dr. Michael Brady used that in our July then hearing. Stoltzfus came in without us being subpoenaed, by the way, came in and testified on the stand that he thought my father was okay. He gave him an MMSE, and you know what those are, don't you? mini mental status exams, stupid little things. He gave him that, and I know that he's fudged the totals. I know he has. And he got on the stand, said Dad was okay. He wasn't incompetent. But Dr. Tilly, the PSYD, is on the stand giving his dad a full psyche valve, telling him he even checked for bereavement. He checked my father, specifically knowing that Mama just died. And he says, this is dementia. This is not. He did the AXIS thing. He does stuff I can't even find on the internet. Anyway, these are the kind of tests they do if a judge is going to want to know if somebody's competent to stand criminal charges.
Right.
The insanity defense, you know what I'm talking about? And so this Dr. Stoltz was on the stand battling against this doctor, saying that Dad's okay, no problem. He can handle his finances, even though Dad doesn't even know what he's got in his account. And then maybe 9 months after that, that's the earliest I know, this doctor has my father on psychotropic drugs. I've got the paperwork. He had him on psychotropic drugs. And ever since then, he's been on psychotropic drugs. So all this time, he's got him on mental drugs when he was on the witness stand saying my father's okay.
My God.
Now,
Don't you wonder when their conscience left them, when their sense of morality and ethics left them? What was it? I always wonder about these people. What was it that happened in their lives that made them discard everything that a normal human being would value, like morals and ethics and conscience and things? Because these people have none. They lose sight of the fact that if they ever had it, that that's a human being they're destroying, and they don't care.
It's you know, I'm 60 years old. He just threw 60 years out a window. My life has just been thrown. My dad, my relationship with my father and my mother have just been thrown out a window. Like, it doesn't even matter. This Michael Brady, this first judge for 3 years. And I say that because after I won the public records writ, because he was refusing me public records, I knew that. And when I won that in 2009, 2010, he went to appeal it. Then they had to bring in another judge because they had to pay my lawyer's fees for that. So they had to bring in a second judge, which just carried on the fraud. I'm sorry, Waller's just carried on the fraud. But in that first, I'm going back to that first year, in this transcript that I just read something out to you, Michael Brady keeps saying, Jim, were you there? Jim, did you go? Jim, you've got to stay away so we know that your dad's doing these things on his own. Jim. It's obvious the judge knows that my brother has got undue influence on my father, manipulating him to be mad at all of us, thinking we're coming after him, that we're the ones that are trying to steal when we're not. It's who's in the house with him. What's even worse is one of my sisters who jumped on his side, and we know that we all have dysfunctional people in our family. That's nothing new. But she filed a CPO against me and one of my other sisters, and we were in August of 2007, after the July hearing, we were in this CPO. The judge was down off the bench, sitting at a table. My sister was beside me, and my dad were the only people in this room. And he was talking to Dad, and, you know, Dad's like, well, you know, Dad kind of sits there like he can check out. Dad can just check out, and he doesn't even know what you're saying around him. And so we were talking about documents I was bringing out before the judge. And at one point, the judge says to me, now, see, I think he's turning around like I need his help, you know, and pointing to my father. I think he's coming around. And I looked at Michael Brady, and I said to him, yeah, and tonight when they go home, my brother will have him all twisted all around again. And he looked at me, as God is my witness now, this is the truth. He looked at me, not in a yes fashion, moving his mouth like, I know.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I swear, as God is my witness. He looked at me and said, I know. And here's what else the judge said. This is important. In that same CPO meeting, if it was a meeting, Brady's looking at me and he's going, but see, your dad's talking to me right now. It's hard for me to call him incompetent. He's talking. Well, I'm thinking, howdy doody talks. What's your point? I mean, Daddy Kathy talks. What's your point?
Yeah.
And I looked at him, and you'll have to understand the story about this. back in Christmas Eve of 2005, because of the loose decisions judges can make, there was a residential group home trouble for group home boys for troubled boys that have, you know, teenage kids, you know, that have some serious problems too in this area. One of them got out and killed Joan Green on Christmas Eve. Beat her bad. Two doors up, this group home was existed from her house. They didn't even know there was a group home there in the area. The neighbors didn't even know that this was a home for these type of kids. He come and beat her. And, of course, he, you know, they found him, you know, got him and charged him. And, of course, she died, you know, beat her bad. And but Brady and the judge and the commissioners were in charge of that group home. They owned that group home. And they were found under 40-some violations by the state. They still aren't allowed to have a group home to this day. And the family, the Green family, actually sued Judge Brady and the commissioners. They did a 42 U.S.C. 1983. And they sued him, and they did settle out of court. They did win.
And he's still a judge, isn't he?
Yeah, he got reelected, too. Could you believe that? And after he got a baby beat. He's stolen from estates, which I found out. He refused us public records. My dad's been living like a pig. I mean, literally like a pig for 6 years, being abused and exploited. And they knew this was going on. They knew it. And this man still, he's still on the bench.
Isn't that amazing how that happens?
And what I was
going to say, he was elected. Ohio is like Minnesota. The Bar Association selects who they want for your district to be the judge, or in that capacity, whatever's open. And you get one choice, and that's the choice they give you. And why these people are on the ballot, I don't know, because whether you vote for them or that you don't, they get the position. And it doesn't make any difference how corrupt they are, how many times they've been charged with crimes, how many times they've just done the most horrendous things. And
well, now this
they
time,
get the
Marty, they had two other choices. Here's what's interesting, and I want to finish something about that story there in that meeting, but here's what's interesting. This time in 08, okay, when all this public records work was going on and the second psyche bell was coming in, there was another person running against Michael Brady, a woman, and she had a really good following. And so he reassigned to run again. And then the lawyer who now has my father, who has been involved with this for 3 years, jumped in and made it a three-way in 08 against Brady and Linda, made it a three-way. And you know what happens in three-ways, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
The incumbent always wins.
Yep.
And don't you know that's the same time that this last lawyer came in to be my dad's guardian. Or not guardian,
okay.
I'm sorry, attorney.
Yeah.
There's a fifth lawyer now that's been involved in this, in this case now. And he slid in at that very time when Brady became reelected. He slid in, became my father's fifth lawyer. And now, why do you think that is?
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's never ending. And Rosanna, what kills me is this is right out there in front of everybody. They don't care who knows. They don't care what you know. They are virtually untouchable because the whole system is corrupt.
They're giving us an open forum.
Yes, yes.
Open forum.
Yep, they don't care. I know when William Windsor submitted that one lawsuit to the Supreme Court of the United States, and there's a bunch of jackals there, but he submitted it asking them one question: was the Constitution still in effect? And they sealed all of the ruling except the part that said, actually, there were two cases, and they sealed everything except where they made the statement that the corruption of the lower courts were of no concern to them. And, you know, our Constitution provides for Article 3 constitutional courts and other courts as may be deemed necessary, but they must abide by the Article 3 provisions. These administrative courts do not. They do not. And so these are unlawful courts to begin with, and yet we're forced to tolerate them. Listen, we're going to take a break here for about 3 minutes. I'd like everybody to be able to go get a cup of coffee, light up a cigarette, which I intend to do. And I know it's terrible. I smoke. But remember, you won't want my body parts. Anyway, We'll be back in just a few minutes, so everybody just hang in there.
In November of 2011, our Congress had passed a measure to open the door to equine slaughter. Now, a predatory industry seeks to gain profits by sales of American horse meat for overseas consumption. 80% of Americans oppose horse slaughter, and the environmental and social impact will be devastating. To learn more, please visit www.equinewelfarealliance.org.
Is your privacy important to you? Is having all of your assets well organized one of your priorities? Do you wonder if your business and personal estate will be protected for your family and not taken away by government bureaucracies? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then now's the time to find out about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust. A pure trust organization is protected by the Constitution and is not subject to government regulation. Property held in a pure trust is free from liens, levies, or other actions filed against you. You can find out more about Freedom Bound International's Pure Trust and schedule a trust consultation simply by calling toll-free 1-888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or log on to www.freedomradio.us. Call us now for information and to schedule a trust consultation. 888-385-FREE. That's 888-385-3733 or online at www.freedomradio.us.
See, nanocells are real small. 1,000 times smaller than these dust particulates. You inhale it, they go to work replicating, spreading like a virus, multiplying in exponentials. 6 months' time, I could have 100 million people converted. Ditch diggers, porn stars, and presidents. Not one would be the wiser. 100 million people who buy what I want them to buy and vote how I want them to vote. Do pretty much damn well anything I figure they ought to do.
Our guest, Rosanna Miller. Rosanna, in all of this, how old is your father right now?
He's 84. I was typing.
Holy crap.
No, 64. Sorry. I don't know why I said 64.
I don't either. You scared me. When I look at all that you've done, in an attempt to fight all of this and just to get your father to a safe place where he's cared for with you, what do you think is ultimately going to be the end resolution to all of this?
In my particular situation, my father will probably die. He'll die in the nursing home alone, isolated. He's been isolated from all of us.
I was going to ask if you could visit him. You can't. Anybody can see him. And what is the reason for that, Rosanna?
Especially me.
Yeah. What is the reason they give for this?
Well, I'm sure they don't want me telling my father that they stole $250,000.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure they don't want him knowing that. Now, while my father's out of it, he still understands that's a lot of money. I mean, is what I'm saying. And of course they don't. They think that I'm going to get to him, and then he'll start screaming and yelling. Which he doesn't want them. He doesn't want this lawyer in there anyway. He already knows that they're stealing from him. Trust me. Somebody's already talked to him. He knows this. So this is not, you know, as to how many children he has or who's married or what they're doing or that kind of stuff. He forgets, but he still knows they're stealing from him.
Right.
And so they don't want anybody around that's going to make any sense to Dad. They haven't, well, the suspect and abuser hasn't wanted that for 6 years. That way they can, he can stay in there and lie to my dad, making him think we're the problem, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, here, Marty, here's the thing. When my mother was sent to her grave and then, you know, I had to file for guardianship of my father, I mean, I had no manual for this. I had no manual for this. I was just following my mom and dad's legal documents, their will, the power of attorney, the successors, you know, or the trust, their trust. And so had they have honored those legal documents and the laws of our state, that being the statutes and the Constitution, and the professional credentials that came in, not the quack that knows the doc, that knows the judge. And by the way, the judge said that on the stand. Oh, I've known him for 20, 25 years. He's a good guy. Oh, you're a good guy. I get it. Okay, your buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of duh, open mouth,
yeah.
Foot. But anyway, that's what he said. And so I'm just saying, if they had done all that, they wouldn't be able to steal the money.
Yeah.
And they knew this. What I was going to tell you. Before I forget, was that first hearing we had, that CPO in August of 2007, the reason I went to Michael Brady and the commissioners owning that group home is because had they have put that one boy in the proper place, Miss Green would never have been murdered. But this Michael Brady's attitude is giving people the least restrictive alternative. So here you got a disturbed boy that's already committed egregious crimes. I mean, I won't go into those egregious crimes. And so he really shouldn't have been there. And when we were in that CPO hearing, he looked at me and he goes, "But I have a hard time calling your father incompetent. He's talking." And I'm thinking, he doesn't know what he's talking about. What does that mean? And I looked right at him and I said, "Well, you know, the Tyndall boy could talk too." And he looked at me, because see, he left him loose, running in and out freely to that group home. And that's what you get for not controlling people, not handling the situation the way it should be handled. If you'd done something serious with the Tyndall boy, he wouldn't have gotten out of the group home and killed somebody. If you'd put my father in the guardianship with me that we needed, my father wouldn't have been living like a pig for 6 years and in cat crap and feces and being exploited. If he had done what he should have done, none of this would have happened. He knew what he was doing. Michael L. Brady knew what he was doing.
And he didn't care.
No, he didn't care. Later
one
on,
of the
one
things
of the...
Go ahead, Rosanna.
Well, later on, the guardian ad litem was having a more honest moment one day when I ran into him. And I kind of was in one of my moods to, you know, try to get answers, okay? And we were having a little chit-chat, and I wrote these comments down. I still have them written down on a piece of paper. And I said, well, I'd be doing a lot better if my mother wasn't down in a grave and my dad would be with us and, you know, my brother wasn't running the show up there and taking everything. And he says, he kept saying to me, there's only one person that could stop it. There's only one person. Finally, I looked at him and I said, you're talking about Brady, aren't you? And he looked up and said, yep. And I said, well, why didn't you do something? If you don't like him, my brother, if nobody up here likes him, why is he getting all this help? There's only two reasons why you help people you don't like. One is they've got something over on you, or two, they've got something you want.
Exactly.
There's two reasons, the only ones that you help somebody you don't like.
Exactly.
Now, which one is it? And my brother is famous. There you go. My brother is famous for tape recording. He tape records everybody that has it transcribed out up there. That's how I have all these conversations of all of his helpers, APS, court clerks. I've got them in hard copy here, the conversations between these people and him.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rosanna, one of the things in all the people that call me every week, it's just a new barrage. But I'm hearing more and more people from more and more people who are saying that they are taking and have convinced their elderly parents to go into hiding, to stay away from APS, social services. They have doctors that they can trust. that they've been with a long time that are supporting them, but more and more people are stashing their elderly parents out of fear that this is exactly what will happen to them and that their care will be out of their control. I've got a number of families who have banded together to protect those elderly parents, and they keep moving them from location to location just to make sure that nobody gets their claws into them. And I think that's probably, I think that is such a sad, sad state of affairs. They're trying to paint all of this as though children do not care about their elderly parents. You hear this on the news. If they report any elder abuse, it's always some jerk-off case they pulled out of somewhere where, yes, a child did abuse their elderly parents. There was, I think I was telling you about it, there's a commercial running on TV here in Minnesota, I don't know if it's running anywhere else, talking about elder abuse, and there is a doctor on there from one of the hospitals saying, you know, 95% of the cases that come into the hospital that concern elder abuse, don't happen, you know, from the professionals and the caregivers. Those are family members that are, and I was just outraged. I was just outraged that they would put this commercial out. There again, you see Dr. Phil, you know, trying to, when everybody was so excited about him having this on about guardianship here a couple months back, and I had said he's going to go out and find the most dysfunctional family he can find and parade them across the screen and say, this is why we need professional guardians, and that is just exactly what he did and said. And they are working hard to condition the public into believing that it is only family members who abuse and exploit. And according to the Government Accountability Office, in 5% of the known cases, that may be true. But in the other 95%, it is strangers to the family. It is caregivers. It is attorneys. It is predatory guardians. It is corrupt judges. That is who is exploiting and abusing these elderly people, strangers to the family. One of the most terrible things I heard in all of this was when we had Dr. Robert Fettgather on, and he has a disabled son. And when I said, why can't you, you know, why don't you have any rights? He said, well, they declared me a legal stranger. I said, what? He said, I was declared by the court to be a legal stranger to my son. There again, this parsing of words, legal is not lawful. Legal means they took something that was formerly your right and made it a privilege. And they can take that privilege away anytime they want to. And so the parent-child relationship, there again in your case, the parent-child relationship, you should have first rights to your father and his care and keep before anybody else.
And unless,
yes, and unless you're a mass murderer, you're a known drug addict, an alcoholic, you know, there is no reason you should not have the care and keep of your father if that's what you want. And I have found most people, I've talked to absolutely hundreds and hundreds of people, and it's always this bipolar thing. Oh, they declared him bipolar, and we never did any tests, and we got all these trumped up medical reports that don't make any sense from people we can't even a lot of times verify are actually doctors. And they go through all of this mess. They give out charges. They levy charges against families and advocates that they supposedly found the person in neglect and blah, 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 blah. In your case, it was true. And they did nothing.
They try to downplay his mental impairment. They bring by bringing in that Stoltzfus guy, they downplayed how serious his condition was, so that they could leave my father, well, I guess I should say it the other way around, so they could leave my brother in the house then with my father when they could see the outside of the property. The roof was blown off. He dropped the insurance. The roof was blown off in 2008. There was no home insurance. There was no phone. There's been no phone since 2008. This was complete isolation, moving my father away from the family, and the lawyers were helping my brother, and or the police now. The police were involved in this. My brother would have the police come up. Anytime we'd come, there come the police. But it's funny because if my brother wasn't in the house, the police never showed up. Now, what does that tell you?
Oh, wow.
I mean, this was going on overload. APS was involved. I can't begin to tell you how many times APS's door was knocked on. Even my brother's comrades, you know, the ones that were in his corner, they were even writing APS and saying he's using his money, he's not buying him any food. I mean, his own team members were writing APS, and still, APS's attitude was this. Well, Mr. Miller knows where his bed is, and he knows where the refrigerator is, so he's okay.
Oh, my God. You don't.
My dog knows where her bed is, and she knows where her food's kept, but I'm not going to give my bills to my dog to do.
Very good. My mother lives in southern Missouri, and she's crazy as a bat out of hell. And she lives, to say that she is living in squalor and is a hoarder is an understatement. I don't communicate with her, haven't for years. My sisters go down there, I refuse to. But recently, when my sisters were reaching a dilemma about what to do about her, I suggested, why don't you call APS? They did. They came out to the house, and oh, it was terrible, and she couldn't live like that. My God, it was awful, and blah, 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 blah. She needed a guardian, and she lives on about 45 acres in prime land in southern Missouri. And so they asked my sisters, after starting this investigation and doing this report and everything, and yes, they were going to put her in a, you know, residential home, or they were, you know, a nursing home, something, and they asked my sisters, how much is her property worth? And my sister said, not much. She took out a second and a third mortgage on it, and she owes more on it now than what it cost her to buy it. And all of a sudden, they changed, and how she lived was her business. And you just leave her alone.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, but this is the thing. See, it was that money motive, that piece of property that would have been valuable. They assumed because of my mother's advanced age, the property was probably paid off. And when they found out it wasn't, well, then suddenly they just weren't concerned anymore, which she was just fine. And
yeah.
I fell out laughing over it because I said, well, I could have told you that's exactly what they were going to tell you. And I said, but you were convinced this was the only way to go. You know, you had to get professional help, get these people in. And but they can't even get the APS service down there in southern Missouri to go out and check on her. They won't do it. They said, she's fine. And but this is the way all of this goes. That judge you spoke about it earlier, you know, has everything been gathered? The first question they ask is, have all the assets been marshaled? And then that judge gets cut off the value of that. That goes into his CRIS account, the Court Registry Investment Service. That goes into his retirement account. And then everybody else starts stepping in, and the cash register starts ringing. And someone in the chat room said on that Phil on that show, Dr. Phil, where he said there was no profit. He advised guardianship because he said there's no profit in it. And
huh?
I mean, what? Yeah, what planet is this? This guy is such a dupe anyway. I mean, he's such a phony anyway. 90% of what he said says is actually idiotic if you listen to him. And and I do listen to him because I keep track of all the crap he spews. But the thing is, see, people, they put people like that out there. They put people like that out there because he's got a persona of sorts that people gravitate towards, and, you know, Mr. Good Guy, and I'm not going to, you have to be totally honest if you're going to speak to me. Why? You're not honest.
Right.
You know, you're not honest. But they do this, and like that commercial that's running here. You know, about 95% of it is committed by. It's absolutely the actual opposite of what the facts are. And it just floors me. This just goes on. And they got all these hucksters out there like Phil and this doctor in this commercial and other people about, oh, we've got to protect. You know, Rosanna, and I brought this up, and if anybody out there can get access to this, I want to see it. Westlaw has a seminar they're giving called How to Make Probate Pay. I ought to send that to Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
How to Make Probate Pay. It is the most lucrative job
profession if you have no morals or ethics and, you know, you're kind of scum of the earth. I mean, my God, you know, it's their years for the pickings. And this stuff just floors me. You got this all the way to the Supreme Court in your state, correct?
Yeah. After Brady said that my dad's okay, when we know he's not, I took it to the appellant court. You have to go to the appellant court. Of course, they just back up anything the trial courts. By now, they're pissed off, and that's another story. It came out of the writ of mandamus that I had to file. The highest Supreme Court overturned part of their decision. Nobody likes to be overturned, and when this happens, you're just SOL. You are on the – it's a power trip from that moment on out. So I took it up at the Supreme Court, my dad's guardianship case, and I presented it as a substantial constitutional question or great general public concern. And they denied that it was a substantial constitutional question or great general public concern. In other words, we don't give a crap about the elderly. At that time, it was $177,000 missing out of the estate, and they just didn't take the case. They don't have to. And then when my mom's estate case came around, they made my father her executor. When we know he can't answer anything on the stand, he doesn't know where any of his accounts are. He doesn't know anything, but the second judge, Walters, said that my father could stay as the executor. That was to protect my brother because I had a civil wrongful
yes.
death suit against him. They didn't want me to be my mom's executor and run that civil wrongful death suit in her name. I'm telling you, I don't care what anybody says, he's protected up there. There's some reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got something on somebody, or else they're just using him as the hot wire to get to the estate. I'm going to, Rosanna, if you don't mind, I'm going to open up the phone lines here. If anybody wants to call in with a question or comment for Rosanna, the number is 917-388-4520. That's 917-388-4520. If you've got any questions or comments or anything you'd like to add to the conversation, please don't hesitate to call. I just, Rosanna, is there any way, after showing this judge these pictures of the squalor your father was being forced to live in, the absolute unsanitary conditions, is there any way you could sue him? I mean, isn't there, like, malfeasance? Well, that's where you use your office for profit. But, well, I guess that would work. But,
yeah, well, I'm definitely looking into it. Because, yeah, I mean, you got willful misconduct, negligence, elder abuse, fraudulent concealment, constructive fraud. There's a breach of fiduciary duty, given there's $250,000 missing. The court is supposed to be the superior court. Superior guardian. That's already been ruled in earlier this year in another case, Spangler case. I mean, they are supposed to be the superior guardian, and they're supposed to have track of all this, and they knew. I put in objections. I've objected about all of this stuff. And they just put on their blinders. They write this stuff. They don't know what they're talking about. They spin and twist these words. They don't mean what they say and say what they mean, like they're supposed to. And it's just amazing to see some of this crap that they write. Real quickly, in my mom's estate case, the third district said something, and I'm going to paraphrase now. Oh, she fell down her stairs to her death in her home. Really? Now, I don't mind them saying she died on November the 24th, 2006, which is true. But when you add that other stuff in there, making it sound like they know how she died when they don't. Her death is undetermined. It's still an ongoing investigation. Were they there in the house? How do they know that? I mean, how can they honestly add all that other when they don't know? This is the spinning and twisting that they do. And here's what's interesting. My mother is not even ICD, you know what an ICD code is. Every medical condition and every death gets an ICD code. With the State of Ohio Vital Statistics or the federal CDC Center, my mother isn't even coded. ICD coded as a fall. So how is the third district saying, oh, she fell down a step death to this, you know, death on a fall and stairs in a house, how they put that when she's not even coded that way? This is the crap. They don't know what they're talking about when they do this. They're lining this out. You know, if you tell a lie enough times, it becomes truth.
Well, that was used during the, especially, I think it was Herbert Goring said that. when the Nazis came to power in Germany, that you tell a lie long enough, you know, and people begin to believe it. And they did, and they do. And I tell you, I've been trying, Rosanna, in relation to the Jimmy Suskie case this week, to get a hold of state representatives, to get a hold of the ombudsman here in Minnesota, who fell and had to have a shoulder replaced. And when she comes out of the surgery, now this is the ombudsman for, you know, elders and so on. And they wanted her to go into the nursing home for 30 days for rehab. She said, okay. She lasted 24 hours and left. She said she sat there for 6 hours and nobody even paid any attention to her. And then once they did get her admitted, she said the care was so terrifying, she bailed out and left and went home. And I've tried to contact her on behalf of Tammy Hooks about her son, Jimmy Suskie. She's not interested. She has the same, she said her position, and we're hearing this statement. The first time I saw it was the fiduciary board's newsletter that they started with in California here last month, that opened with the statement, we're here to protect the public, not to punish licensees. Well, then why are you there? You know, why are you there? And I got this same thing from her office. They're there to protect the public, not to punish licensees or wrongdoers. And I'm hearing this. This tells me that there is a plan of action that is being passed around. These are flag terms that are to be used, jingles, slogans, this, that, and something else, because everybody's using them. They might not be verbatim, but they are so close, you know, it's no accident. And that they're not there to punish the licensees. Well, apparently, neither is the Bar Association, and apparently, neither is the state judicial system, and apparently, neither is anybody else. So basically what we have is an organized ring operating county to county, state to state, across the country. We have these racketeering efforts going on that's quite successful, that we can show a pattern of collusion and profiteering. And we've got RICO established, and of course we are told we can't use. I had the state attorney general, and I believe it was in New York, told me that the RICO provisions were only to be used by the federal government and that a citizen couldn't use them. And, of course, I fired back with multiple cases where they had done exactly that. And I said, you know, maybe you need to go back to law school or check with the Bar Association to see if you really should have a license. And but the misinformation these offices will give you, and disinformation and outright lies that they will tell you. And when I was speaking to this ombudsman here, I said, you know, by your own experience, she says, well, that was just an isolated case. I said, isolated only because it involved you. But this is going on all over the place. And what do you think? I said that of all the rehab centers and all the nursing homes in the state of Minnesota, you just happened to get stuck in the one that treated you like crap? I said, this isn't an exception. This is the rule. Well, I've got important things to care. I said, but wait a minute. I'm telling you about a young man who's been abducted, is isolated. His family doesn't know where he is. And she said to me, well, she said, but his mother caused him some harm, and there was a neglect and abuse. And I said, you need to actually read the file. That neglect and abuse occurred while he was under the care of the hospital. It
just
wasn't
like
the mother who did this.
Just like my dad. And they take no responsibility for this at all. They take none. They excuse it away. You know, and you're right, Marty. Listen, in 2011, the Ohio Attorney General's office, they have Elder Abuse Commission. They have an Elder Abuse Commission. And back in 2011, they were allowing the people to come up and have a five-minute window span to speak about some concern, whatever. Listen, I went down there every month in 2011. You will find my name in the public concerns every month down there. They don't tell what I'm talking about, but they say, Rosanna Miller came down, we tell them all the same old story. And I brought down examples for these people. Now, there's a member from every organization in Ohio down there. APS, JFS, ProSenior, Prosecutor's Office, the Ohio Supreme Court, the Clerk's Office, you name it, and there's somebody from one person from each, or up to 25 people, okay, come to this commission meeting once a month. I was down there, I'd bring them back down to my parents' estate that was going on. I showed them APS's conversation with the suspect, an abuser. I mean, I brought down my dad's medical and what Stoltzfus did against this clinical psychologist. I was bringing all, and they just kind of started bowing their head when I come in. I mean, it was like, okay, so you get it. You know this is all going on, but they couldn't intervene because they have to be asked by the county. Me coming down isn't enough. They have to be asked in by the county, somebody from the county. Well, isn't that kind of like giving the store, this is why I put in my affidavit disqualification, isn't that kind of like giving the owner's store to the thief who just robbed it? I mean, waiting for them to report to you, you think this is going to happen sometime soon? And then now this was in 2011, the next year in September, just last September, here's my brother being arrested and the house is like a It's unspeakable. And let me tell you something. While some people don't live the cleanest of others, what is so damning about all of this is my mother was the most immaculate housekeeper you would ever want to see. She would make you literally sick. I mean, it's the first thing that came out of the detective's mouth when I went down after her passing, and I went down to see him about all this. It's the first thing that came out of his mouth, boy, your mother really keeps a clean house. And I'm like, what are you? I'm not here to talk about my mother's death. Now I understand how important that was. But you could have eaten off her floors. So when you look at those pictures, you don't know the shame. You just don't know as hard as she worked. And then I look at that house. That is the prime example of what the government, that's the government's workmanship right there. That's the workmanship of the government when you see those photos.
Please don't cry. I'm so sorry.
And my father was living in that. I want to share one other thing with you really fast. Last July, and I've got this in my affidavit or my habeas. No, it wasn't my habeas because I couldn't get the report at the time. They tell a lot of things for me I had to really fight to get. But I do have it in the affidavit of disqualification. Last July, my father had one of those livid moments, and he called the police up. Because he waits till Jim leaves, see, to call. And he went to the neighbors, has to go to the neighbors because he doesn't have a phone. And he called the police, and he says, look, my money, I guess I need to back up. My parents had a, and this is public records anyway, so I'm not telling you anything secret. It's stamped with the probate stamp. There was $173,000 cash in a bona fide safe out in the garage. It's a real safe. It's a cylinder safe. Fire can't touch it. And, there was $172,000 out there, which is part of their, you know, estate. And that money was released back to my brother there in the house in December of 2010. It was withheld from my father for 4 years, the release back then. So that money's in the house. And when I, this police report I'm telling you about in July of last year, my father had this livid moment. He called the police. It's in this report. You'll see it in my affidavit. And, he calls him and says, look, my money's missing. I send my, give my son $50 and he doesn't bring me my, for a pizza. He doesn't bring me my change back. He showed the officer the pizza box and he says, these bands that held $1,000 of money. He said, look, it's missing. And the officer looks and he says in the report, there's a lot of empty bands here, you know. We're talking $160,000 cash now that was here. And the officer even puts in there financial exploitation. He writes in this report, financial exploitation. He's recognizing that Mr. Miller is a victim of financial exploitation. So he goes and calls APS, this wicked, nasty man in APS, who is worthless. They need to get rid of him. He goes and turns around and calls the lawyer, Stephen Fansler, okay, the one who's involved in all this for the last 4 years. And guess what? They did nothing. My dad's in the report saying, well, he wants my brother out. But when they ask Dad, do you want us to help you get him out, like I haven't been trying this for 6 years, right, Dad says no. Well, I think he kind of remembers the last time that him and Mom tried to get him out. She ended up in her grave.
Yeah.
I don't
is
think
that,
my
is
father's...
Is that what happened, Roseanne? Is that what happened?
Yes. There was an eviction notice. It's all documented. It's overkill. The documentation is overkill.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, they were trying to get him out, and my mom ends up dead 24 days later in the house. Anyway, Dad remember, you know, even though he's mentally impaired, you know, he knows Jim's background and his history. And so they walk out, leave my father with Jim for 2 more months before my brother's finally arrested in September. Now, all of this is in my affidavit of disqualifications, in my habeas. You know, some of it I didn't have quite in December the 4th when I wrote the habeas, but I got it afterwards. Anyway, they walked out, and then when they go to arrest my brother in September, and now this inventory is being turned in, of course, the $173,000 is missing, plus another, up to $250,000, so there's another $75,000 that are gone out of the accounts. All the accounts have been moved around, altered, and yet the lawyers, APS, the court, were all supposed to be in charge of this. Now,
at the very least, Roseanne, this is dereliction of duty. At the very worst, it's just grand theft. It's facilitating the theft. It's aiding and abetting the commission of a crime.
Does this not reek to you that these people all know this stuff's going on and are looking away on purpose?
Yes, exactly. Well, Roseanne, look what they do to attorneys who try to do the right thing.
Yes,
they
turn
around, they chew them up, they disbar them, they sanction them, they ruin their names, they ruin their business. They do anybody that tries to put a chink in this money mill that's going on. The Bar Association's going to jump too and tear them up. And all their members right along with them. They will absolutely go, I'd call it legal cannibalism. They will eat each other rather than have the money mill stopped.
You're right. That's why we need to get our common law juries going. That's why we need to, we need to get our representatives, though, working for us and not the executive and the judicial branch. And I hope that people grab this link and ship it to all the reps. I hope they grab this link, and I hope they send it to all their reps. And, you know, they need to be working for us. That's what makes us a republic, Marty, not along with our 3 votes. But our representatives, having representation is what makes us a republic, and our Constitution guarantees us that.
Thank God. But see, there again, like I say, Roseanne, the way they get away with this is these are not constitutionally constructed courts. These are fictions. And we have been conned into this statute and code thing in Iowa. Ruth Klotz, that old bat that sat on the bench down there till she was older than Methuselah, was very active in going to the Iowa legislature and getting them to remove from the Iowa statutes on guardian and conservatorship the right to due process. Here's this woman's a judge, or was a judge. Like I say, there's another grim reaper. The Constitution of the state and the federal constitution says you can't do this. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets the right to due process. But see, these are telltale signs. They're not operating under constitutional law. They're operating under corporate contract law.
Right.
Statute and code. So they went into this, these codes and statutes are corporate structures, and they went in under the corporation and said as a corporation, and that judge, and I don't know if everybody knows or not, but every court in this country, including SCOTUS, is listed on Dun & Bradstreet. It is a for-profit corporation. They generate their own credit rating, and they can contract for profit. So who is it these people are contracting with? Then I also found out a curious thing here a while back, and I'm trying to run down more on it, that many of the courtrooms in this country are actually owned by the judge sitting in them. And he leases that courtroom to the state as long as he remains the judge on the bench. Now, how in the hell did that happen?
He leases it to the state?
Yes. That many of these courtrooms are actually owned by the judge sitting on the bench.
So a lot of times when these judges are saying, this is my courtroom and the law says what I say it says, they're actually speaking the truth. It is their courtroom.
Well, I just know this. I know that they all cover up for each other, and they're not going to bust the bubble. If they want to work again in the area that they're at, they better toe the line, and they better follow the big guy, and they better do what they're told to do, because they can make it unbelievably miserable for you. They can come after you, and we all know that anyway. But I'm just saying, you know, you got to get somebody that's going to be honest, and we just can't find it. We're just, it's like the government against the people.
It is. And the other thing is, and someone mentioned it there in the chat room, about these CRIS accounts, the Court Retail Investment Service. Every judge is incorporated, okay? He's a corporation, has to carry a surety bond and, you know, be on file in his state. They all have these retirement accounts. This is automatic. They get these retirement accounts. And every time one of these cases come before them, this is why these judges will allow attorneys to file motion after motion after motion. These are the vexatious litigants. These are the frivolous lawsuits that come before these judges. They allow it because every time they hear one of these motions or anything, they get to tap that estate for what was the total value of the estate. That's why that judge wants to know if all the assets have been marshaled, because it tells him how much money he's going to get off of that estate if he sits there and never does anything. And so out east, it's 2-3% in general. As you move west and get to California, it runs about 5-6%. So every time one of these immoral attorneys, these hacks that they call lawyers, comes in front of that judge with one of these frivolous lawsuits or motions or whatever it is, the register rings again. That money goes into that judge's court retail investment account, his retirement account. He can never touch the principal. That just keeps accumulating. But the interest off that account is deposited directly into their checking account, their bank account, every month. So it's profitable, monetarily profitable for that judge to allow these attorneys to come in, and keep filing these motions. They really don't care how many motions are filed or what they're about or how stupid they are, because every time they sit to hear on that case, they get to hit that estate again. It's just like the guardians who take let's talk about Lisa Belanger's case last year. The guardian took $190,000+ from her father's estate.
Uh-huh.
I can't imagine she must have been dancing naked in her father's house for him on a table or doing pole dancing, something to have earned that kind of money.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, these guardians, when they take this kind of money, somebody said, well, they have to pay taxes on it. Well, they do. they do, but the estate pays the taxes. So if they ask, they say, well, I'm billing for $10,000. What they're not telling you, let's just say hypothetically the taxes were 10%, is that it's $10,000 plus whatever the tax levy is. And the estate pays the tax levy on that. They never actually put out a dime. So and there again, you can report this to the IRS that they did not actually pay. Now, the common sense thing, if you or I did this, Rosanna, if you or I took $10,000 from the estate and said, well, it was for expenses and this and that, we'd have to claim it as income and pay tax on that $10,000 out of our money, out of the $10,000. In fact, the IRS would deduct the taxes from it before we ever saw any portion of it.
Uh-huh.
But with these guardians and attorneys, that doesn't happen. Now, that's no accident. That's no accident. And the reason it doesn't happen is because the money is drained off of the estate. It comes in under miscellaneous accounting or, you know, this or that, you know, expenses, you know, extended expenses, this kind of thing. It's always fluff and hype in there somewhere that has a large amount of money attached to it. And most generally what that is the taxes that the estate paid on money that was stolen from it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, talk about racketeering.
I mean, they're just completely irresponsible to anything. I mean, my father should have to live like this for 6 years. And the depravity of that property, the roof blown off, the cat shit in the house. It had to be gutted. Carpet, everything. When it was spick and span clean when my mother was sent to her grave, do you know what that's going to cost? Now, I said there's $250,000 missing out of the estate, out of a $500,000 estate. Wait till that lawyer puts in the bill for restoring that house and putting it back in a decent, you know, wait till that bill comes in, then watch how much is going to be left in that. $500,000. And these people are not only supposed to be responsible to my father first, but they are supposed to protect that estate for the beneficiary of that ward. They are supposed to protect the estate for the beneficiaries of the ward and what they had in their wills and their legal documents and everything. And the only thing they're protecting is their own pockets, and I don't think they're paying taxes on any of it.
No.
None of it. And I'm going to tell you something, Marty. I think, you know, I've been doing a lot of research on this. You know, 42 U.S.C. 1983 is a civil. And, you know, those rights of having that family were endowed by God to me. God gave me those rights. And they were endowed to
right.
me. They're my inalienable rights. The Constitution is supposed to protect those. These people have gone in using, and I've known this all along, using my mentally impaired father, committing undue influence on him, and, you know, having him do things that he wouldn't have done in his, you know, if he was in normal, around normal people. But this is what they've done just to make sure they can get to him. Everybody was vying for my father's signature. Everybody was vying for his signature. And now that he's had to live through this like this for these 6 years, in the turmoil of losing my mother, who he was married to for 58 years, who took care of him. These are immoral people that have no, they have no, you're right, they have, I mean, you know, I said this too, they have none. But they are committing these Title 18, USC 241, which is conspiracy against rights. It was. It was conspiracy
yes.
to take away my rights with my father and his other family members in good standing.
You're breaking up on us there, Rosanna. Okay. Yeah, you're cutting in and out there, dear. So,
oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Oh, I agree with you. That is exactly what it is. I want to go back, too, to this, how this stuff is charged off to the estate. The other thing is the $10,000 that the predator sapped off the account, and we're using that hypothetical amount, is then instead of listed as income many times to avoid, and we've lost Rosanna, I see, that is avoid to avoid paying taxes on that as it, part of their accumulated income, is written off as expenses. It's written off as, you know, like they had to drive here or there and the wear and tear on their car, you know, they had to open an envelope, they had to answer a phone, the wear and tear on their phone and wear and tear on their letter opener. I mean, they come up with some of the damnedest crap you ever saw to avoid taxes, and the IRS lets them get away with it. The judges let them get away with it. In most cases, we cannot even get an actual accounting where we know that things have been taken from the estate. We know personal possessions that were valuable were there. There's supposed to be a total inventory that's supposed to be handed over to the court. And if the inventory ever shows up, these things have mysteriously disappeared. They never saw them. They never found them. They didn't know about them. They break into safety deposit boxes where personal papers and maybe other personal items that are of value are held. And those things disappeared. Supposedly, these elderly people have kept the safety deposit box for years and years and years with nothing in it. And it's just amazing how all of this works, and this is never questioned by the court. It is never questioned by the court. So it is a racket, and this is racketeering. We seem to have lost Rosanna here, and she isn't coming back, and I just tried to dial her. I think her phone might have gone dead because it started cutting in and out. We're going to have her back on again because this story, there's a lot more to this story than you can imagine. While we wait just a few more minutes, I wanted to tell you we will have Wayne Barbuto on, I hope, this Tuesday evening, talking about the difference between trial by jury and a jury trial. These are two distinctly different
scenarios. One gives the judge the right to instruct the jury, to tell them to ignore the law, to tell them to do whatever he wants them to do, and the law doesn't apply. In the other, the judge is simply there as an arbitrator and has to remain silent. The idea that judges can instruct a jury, if a judge is instructing a jury, you've lost all of your rights. And we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about why you should never hire an attorney, what it means when you do. And this is why in many of these cases where people are representing themselves pro se, and there's more than 200 Supreme Court rulings that support this, that you have the right to represent yourself, that you do not have to be pushed into this thing of hire an attorney. A judge is totally out of bounds if he tells you, you have to hire an attorney. No, you don't have to hire one, and you don't want to. And we'll be going into that. Roseanne, we got you back here.
Yeah.
It dropped
down.
We lost you there for a few minutes. We've got about 5 minutes left. Roseanne, is there anything you would like to, you know, wind up with? Anything that maybe we missed here in this long conversation?
I just, there's so much here in these cases with mom's death and dad's abuse and the theft and all. And there's just so much to documents, letters, you know, conversations. I mean, it's obvious that they were working not for the best interest of my father or my family. Their eye was on the prize of money.
Exactly. One lady told me, she said her father's estate was worth somewhere around $5.5 million, and she said by the time, you know, she got done fighting with him, her father passed away. That's what brought it to an end. And she said they continued to take another $2 million. And but she said at one point she became so frustrated that in the courtroom she screamed at the judge and these predators that were opposing her. She said, keep the effing money. That's all you want anyway. That's all you're interested in. Keep the effing money. Just give me my dad back. And she said the whole place just absolutely came apart. And she said, I was just at the end of my rope. Her father died about a week later. But she said, you know, to know that he was being held by strangers, abused and mistreated, neglected. And she said, and here this man had built this tremendous wealth. She also said, too, that Roseanne, that the judge accused her of being greedy, that she, you know, her father had this huge estate. And, yes, she was listed in all these papers. But he threw that will and that trust and all of that stuff aside because it was just her greed at work. And like I said before, you have a right to inherit. You have a right to expect to inherit. Your parents expect to give you an inheritance if they have a sizable estate. That's not greed. That's just family business.
That's common.
Yeah, but it's all right for these predators to be greedy and to steal.
Exactly.
That's okay.
I just know that we need investigations on this. Because I can tell you that they knew this was going on and they did nothing. I've got the proof in police reports. They did nothing. They walked away. You can't tell me that, you know, if you want to stop something, you stop it. They have the power to do it. We know they do. So they didn't stop this for a reason. And, hey, Marty, $173,000 cash? How do you trace that? How do you trace that?
Exactly. And I bet they didn't find it, and it wasn't on the inventory. It fell off the inventory, and nobody knows where it went.
Exactly. Where were the police at?
Yeah.
What did they investigate?
I'm telling you. Roseanne, we've got just a few minutes left here. I want to thank you so much for coming on this evening. This has been a tremendous interview and a good conversation. And hopefully we got some people on board with this. I know everybody just with each of these shows becomes angrier and angrier. And I do think you're right. We need to look at these citizens' grand juries and avoid and bypass these kangaroo courts.
Yes, I do too.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. It's springtime in Minnesota. I'm choking to death. Anyway, everybody go have a good stiff drink, If I had any booze, I would.
Yeah.
And, oh, goodness sakes. Sorry.
That's okay.
Anyway, we will be back next Sunday evening. I'm not sure just yet who our guest will be. I've got several irons in the fire on that one. But, Roseanne, I want to follow up with you at a later date on this, and let's cover some more of this and see where we're at on it. Let me know what, if anything, we can do. Everybody, keep in mind June Gwynn. Keep hammering that guardian, that Miss Jameson, to allow visitation. Like I say, I had hopes that Miss Gwynn was still alive. I really was hopeful. But the way this has gone, a phone conversation where she wasn't allowed to speak, and there's no evidence that she was actually even there, and the refusal by the daughter, who's supposed to be taking care of her, to even take the camera from Linda Kincaid and take a picture of this woman so we could substantiate that she was still alive. She refused to do that under instructions of the guardian. So there again, I'm back to where I was before. I think it's highly unlikely this lady is even still alive. But there's money to be got, so we'll keep her death certificate in the drawer till it's handy. Anyway,
yeah.
We'll be back. Tomorrow night is I've got a fellow coming on from Baltimore to talk about the IntelliLights going in out there for Homeland Security, total surveillance of you and your neighborhood. They're doing this all across the country. I don't know where we're going to go. Hopefully I will have Wayne Barbuto on Tuesday night to talk about trial by jury versus jury trial, why you need to know the difference. Hopefully that can be arranged. In the meantime, thanks everyone for being here. Roseanne, thank you for giving us your time. And I wish I had something wonderful to say to you to lift your spirits. Unfortunately, I'll probably hang up from this and cry for a little bit. I'll find a way out of this. I don't know how just yet, but I'm going to find a way out of this. And I'm a fast learner.
We got to study the courts. We got to study common law. Get on that site with the New York, well, now National Liberty Alliance, and let's get these common law juries up and running. We got to organize this stuff. We're going to have to take our country back by ourselves. That's all there is to it.
Yes,
we have to do this.
And
I want my dad. I want my dad back, and I want justice for what happened to Mother. And they just totally botched this whole thing up badly.
Oh my God. All right, well, we'll be back next week, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. As always, it's been a heart-wrenching evening, but we need to know what's happening. If we don't know what's happening, we can't work to fix.
Exactly.
So,
thank you,
night,
Marty,
everyone,
for doing the shows and being there for us.
Well, I appreciate all the support.
Okay.
We'll talk to everybody next week.
Okay, thanks.
Night.
Bye.